Welcome back to Heartfilled Holidays, where families create happiness. Today, as I promised, we are interviewing Susan Borison. Susan is the founder and editor of Your Teen Media. She is the proud mother of 5 children, so she definitely knows what she is talking about here. And if you chat with her, she'll tell you that as a mom, her law degree really came in handy, but publishing a parenting magazine for parents of teenagers has definitely been more valuable for her. So, Susan, welcome to Heartfilled Holidays.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule, running your business, taking care of your family, and taking care of yourself and your hubby, too. It's going to take a lot of time out of your schedule, and we are very excited that you are going to be sharing some of your insights and tips about teens with us today.
Great.
So I know that in the work you've done, you have learned a lot about teens and parents and families. And when we spoke, one of the things you mentioned was that parents tend to worry and get themselves worked up over the wrong things, that like the things that we think are a danger to our kids aren't really the biggest dangers out there. In that we're kind of putting our energy sometimes into the wrong place, that we need a little heads up on here are the things that you definitely need to pay attention to, not that we ignore everything else.
Right. Well, what I would say is that why would we know? When we're starting this parenting journey with young children, we have no clue what we're doing, and we spend a lot of time talking to friends and sharing information. And there's some funny assumption that as you do this longer, you get better at it. But the truth is when your kid hits each new stage, you're a brand new mom all over again. So when you hit adolescence, why would you know where to place your priorities? And one of the things we try to do at Your Teen Magazine is offer up information that potentially lets you into your second child's experience without having to live through the stumbling blocks of your first time doing it. So what we have seen, and what I have seen personally, is that there are certain things that I personally invested a lot of time in that I got better at with each kid. And one of them, for sure, was this notion of popularity. And in our world, we value how many friends you have in social media. I mean, what kid isn't looking at how many likes they get on a post? And even as parents, we do that. So much value is placed on popularity. And yet, if we think back to when we were kids, most of us really weren't in the popular crowd. And in fact, a lot of the people that meet with success in life are not the kids who were the most popular kids. And what you really need, according to the experts, is 1 or 2 close friends. Now, kids who are isolated and lonely, obviously there's different concerns. But if your kid has 2 very close friends but isn't getting invited to all the parties and you're feeling awful, the message you're sending your kid is that they're not good enough. So as parents, we have to be very careful to love the kid we have and really not the kid we had hoped for. So if we were hoping somehow to live our own adolescence through our children and maybe we weren't so popular but we thought this perfect kid was going to be the one to do it, we have to step back from that and let them get what they need in life. And for each kid, that's going to be different, and you have to pay attention to that as a parent.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think you're right. And I think sometimes, too, as parents, we worry about the things that maybe bothered us as teenagers.
Right.
And want to make sure our kids don't have to go through it.
Correct. Totally true. We want them to not to suffer over the things that we suffered with.
So just can you list off maybe, you know, mentioned popularity. Are there a couple of other common things that we tend to focus on or stress over that aren't necessarily the big issues today?
Well, I think there's such a massive emphasis on college right now, and our kids are under so much stress. And as parents, we're under so much stress because the system has changed. Most of us, the schools we got into with the scores we had, we wouldn't be getting into them today. And there's just so much pressure for our kids. But I want to point out that there's over 2,000 four-year colleges in America. And what that means is that there's many opportunities for your child to have a wonderful experience. And when everybody gets invested in a particular type of school or one particular school, it's really every kid that's applying to those top schools is qualified, and so it's out of your hands. And so having those other options and having a healthy perspective that there's more than one place to have a wonderful college experience. And I can tell you, in my own home, my oldest daughter got into her first choice and had a wonderful experience. And my second kid went to his fifth choice. He did not get into his first four. And he's having a wonderful experience. And it's really challenging to set your sights on one school or one category of schools. And that disappointment can be so heavy. And you can really lose your 4 years of high school trying to make sure you've got everything on your resume to get in and still not get in. So, you know, we have to help our kids enjoy their high school experience, also keeping an eye toward college, but with a little more balance.
Yeah, and there are a couple of things that were really interesting to me. One was you said they can lose their high school experience. And I love the way you said that, because there is so much pressure on them. You know, join these clubs, show your leadership, do this, do that. And what I found with my kids was the leadership pieces that seem to be a hot topic right now actually came out of not the things that you would have expected. It wasn't because they went and became an officer of a club. It naturally grew out of them doing the things they loved. And because that was what they enjoyed doing. And so when they started doing it, they invested more of themselves in it. And that just naturally grew for them. Yeah, you know, yes, they had other things that maybe they volunteered in or they did. I've got one that does everything under the sun and one that did very little. But that was interesting to me. The other one was this idea that there's like one right school. That has been fascinating to me. This, everyone says, you know, when you walk on the campus, you'll know it. And my first one was kind of like that. And my second one's like, yes, they're different, but they're not that different, you know, once you've sorted out. And so now she's all stressed out because she's not walking on a campus and going, this is the one for me. And I'm like, honey, you are in the catbird seat, because you can just apply to all of those that you didn't knock out and take it from there and not have to stress out about, did you get into your first choice or not? But it's a fascinating thing. I think that you were giving great advice to not stress about it as parents and to not make our kids stress about it.
Well, our kids are getting it from everywhere. So if as parents, we can, I mean, they're getting it just from breathing. They're getting that pressure.
Yeah.
So if as parents, you can help pull back on that a little bit, I think they'll be grateful.
Yeah. Okay. So these are the areas that not that we don't pay attention to them, but these are not the things that we need to be stressing about and making sure are perfect. What are the areas that we really should be paying attention to? What are the dangers, the threats, the big deals in teens' lives today?
So there are the ones that are life-threatening. And to me, driving, we should all be way more attentive to teaching our kids to be great drivers and the rules of the road and the rules of your house and to be very defensive drivers. And most of us are doing what the state requires. And then we give them all this freedom, and it's the potential consequences are so dramatic that we all need to be paying more attention there. Texting and driving. I mean, even the adults are doing it, but for sure, new drivers, they shouldn't be having their phone up front with them turned on, because it's Pavlovian to respond to a text, to pick up your phone, and it's too hard not to do it. So turn off your phone when you get in your car. Yet how many of us are going through that driving stage with our kids and making clear that we behave appropriately in the car and that we set the guidelines for them to do the same thing? When you're driving along, you know when you're behind somebody who's texting or reading a text, and it's scary.
Just texting. I mean, it's because we use our phone, and they use their phones even more. My biggest thing, actually, texting, I've learned, like you said, it was Pavlovian. So I'm like, okay, train myself to ignore the dings. But the one that's really hard for me is Shazam. Because I'm driving and the song's on the radio. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love this song. I wonder what it is. I wonder who the artist is. And they don't tell me. And that's when I actually want to reach out and grab my phone. And obviously I'm not doing that, but it's so hard not to. And our kids use their phones for even so much more than we do, that it's an unbelievable temptation to pick that silly thing up.
Right, right. So to me, that's something that we need to give more attention to than we do. There's this 6-month grace period in Ohio, and other states have their own rules for their permit driving. I think it could be a lot more intense for our kids before we actually free them to take the keys to the car. This is not life-threatening, but I think this is very concerning. Kids are leaving our houses, and colleges are seeing this whole, what they're calling now, failure to launch. And in that, this world of helicopter parenting, we have taken away that independence from our kids, and so they're leaving our houses without the tools to succeed. And that doesn't necessarily mean the academic tools, but the tools to manage when something is going wrong. Because up until that point, a parent has gone in and met with the adults to make sure that whatever was going wrong for their child was taken care of. Dealing with just the basic skill set of doing laundry and managing your checking and all of these independence that they lost on the way to college. So I think that the pendulum will swing back, but right now, with parents hovering over their kids so totally and not wanting them to slip and fail at all, the kids are missing out on a lot of those skills.
It's harder, I think, to let them slip and fall now. When my kids were little and they were learning to walk and they'd fall down, okay, fine. You see them, they're falling on this seriously padded rear end on, you know, thick pile carpeting. You know they're not really getting hurt. And so you just kind of let them go, let them get up, let them do it again. But the stakes seem so much higher, and it even ties back into, like you said, this whole thing about, you know, like college and all these other things that we're worrying about. It's very hard, I think, to pull back from a teen's life and let them screw up when you can see it, but to let them make that mistake and dig out of it.
I agree. I think that's what's driving all of us. So I guess if you could hear the first part of this conversation and pull a little bit back from the whole college story, you would then be able to let your kid fail a little bit in high school where the consequences are so much lower than mm-hmm. if you wait until they're out on their own. And that's the first time they mess up with money, and that's the first time they get a bad grade in college. You know, it's like if we protect them all the way through, the consequences just keep ratcheting up. And high school, there's still this very big safety net. Your parents are there. The school wants to see you succeed. So that's the perfect time. Let them mess up.
Yeah, and actually I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, yeah, even junior high, it seems like junior high is kind of that first place in school where they take on, they really take on a lot more responsibility. In most places, that's where they start changing classrooms and they get lockers and just kind of little things, making more decisions about classes. The classes aren't just handed to them. Now you get to choose, do I take this or do I take that? It seems like that'd be even a great time to back it up a little further, to teach ourselves how to let go, because that's a skill set too. We're going to have to pop out for a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. But I'm just realizing, listening to your magazine and what you do, your blog, you really educate parents on learning new skill sets. And I hadn't thought of it that way before, but love what you're doing there. And we're going to go for a real quick commercial break. When we come back, we are going to continue our conversation with Susan Borison of Your Teen Media and yourteenmag.com. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Heart-Filled Holidays, where families create happiness. We are continuing our conversation with Susan Borison, the founder and editor of Your Teen Media and yourteenmag.com. And Susan, there is so much information here. As we chatted during break, we said we can't, you know, possibly get into all of it. But before we go on to actually the next topic, you know, the next threat to our kids, was there anything else you wanted to say about the things that we had been discussing so I don't cut you off?
Oh, I mean, I think the one important piece to remember about this giving our kids the opportunity to fail is that resilience is something that we all need in life. And if we don't, it's a muscle. And if we don't exercise that muscle, we never get the strength to deal with the obstacles that we will inevitably encounter. So if you could look at middle school and high school as an opportunity, and even consider like a mental checklist where your kid comes home and tells some terrible story about a wrong that happened to them, and in your head you kind of say to yourself, that's one for resilience. you'll respond entirely differently than you would have if you got into this, my child, my poor child, that was so unfair. You'll have a very different reaction when you think of it as a positive instead of a negative.
Oh, I love that. I love that idea. And that's what we need as parents. We need to be able to see our kids as growing and getting stronger. And yes, we hate to see them go through something bad. I also think sometimes we just make the assumption that they want us to make it better. And all they really wanted to do was tell somebody, have them listen. It's just like, you know, when they're two and they let go of the helium balloon by accident. They just need you to let them cry and, you know, give them some hugs and go, I know that was so sad, honey. And they'll be okay, and they get over it. They don't need us to run out and buy a new balloon. And here they don't need us to rush in and talk to the teacher for them.
Well, that's actually a great point. And I know you want to move on, but I just want to say this great point is that it's okay for us to ask our kids. If there's a situation that you actually feel like maybe you should intervene, it's okay to ask our kids, did you want to just tell me this and complain to me, or did you want me to help you solve this? And it's really actually very brilliant and simple at the same time. And when you ask that question, your kid will let you know what the purpose of that telling of that story was. And so you take their cue.
Mm-hmm. What about the situation where they want us to solve something, but we know if we look at it honestly that we really shouldn't do that for them? Do you have a tip for us dealing with that or dealing with the guilt that comes in? Like, oh, I really should be protecting my child, but no, I shouldn't.
Well, I would say the guilt comes from this feeling that we have to protect them. And if we shift the paradigm in our brain and say this, our role as a parent is to really build the resilience, the guilt will go away because it will look like the right thing to do. And in terms of talking to your child, I think it's fair to say that this is something I am confident you can manage. And it's empowering for your child to say those words.
I like that. I like that a lot. So my role as a parent is to build their resilience. And the other thing, the thought that came to me when you said that is sometimes taking care of it isn't going and doing it for them. It's just maybe brainstorming with them on ways they can do it. Well, honey, what could you do about this?
Great suggestion.
And maybe sharing some suggestions.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we have gotten driving and resilience. What else are we not paying attention to that we really should be?
Well, this is big, and this is scary in my mind. We have really a growing heroin epidemic in our society, and it's really stemming from prescription drug use. And it's this crazy story. Every time we ask someone who has an addiction problem with either prescription drugs or heroin, it really goes back to a time when they either had their wisdom teeth out or had an injury in sports and were given painkillers. And we apparently live in a society right now where doctors are casual about the giving of those drugs. And I only know this because I read and write nonstop about parenting teenagers. But I had a kid who had her wisdom teeth out. And because I'm aware of this, when the doctor's office said that I could buy the painkillers right there for not very much money, but save me a trip to the pharmacy, I said, well, I only want however many she will need. They were going to give me 20. I said, how many will she need? It sounded like she would maybe need 5. So I said, then I'd like 5. And they said, we can't sell it to you that way, because they're prepackaged, and that's how they do it. So, you know, there's an example of me, and my kid actually never took any of them. Mm-hmm. So I had 20 sitting around my house, which I know to put away and to lock up because I know of this problem. But when you don't know it, it's, you know, a doctor tells you to do something, and you listen, and it very quickly your child can have a problem that can't be filled with prescription drugs. They're not as easy to get. And heroin is easier and cheaper, and it's happening in our neighborhoods. It's not someone else's problem. It's not a particular demographic. And as we talk about it at our team meetings at Your Teen Magazine, everybody has their own version of that story, where they went to the pharmacist and said to the pharmacist, I don't want to fill the whole prescription. And the pharmacist said, well, why wouldn't you? So you really have to know here. You have to know that the professionals are not being responsible in this arena. And as parents, you have to take charge and you have to insist. What is the possible number? How many days will my child be in pain that requires this kind of medication? Or, I mean, I know when I had my wisdom teeth out a zillion years ago, I took Motrin.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said your child didn't take them at all. Mine didn't last summer.
Right.
And so it's one of those things that you even go, can I wait and fill this a little later if she actually needs it?
And that's because we know. But there are many more people who just don't know. And the other thing that doctors often say is get ahead of the pain, right? So it's this fear that if you don't take that first pill, the pain will be overwhelming and you won't be able to get to it. So you're going to treat with narcotics pain that hasn't even erupted yet. You'll never know that you don't need it.
Wow. Okay, so one of the things that's happening is the kids themselves are getting treated with painkillers for something legitimate. The doctors are overprescribing, so we need to watch that. But I'm assuming you also run into situations where kids have needed the painkillers and taken the painkillers, but they only needed them for a while, and then they became addicted. Is that a correct assumption?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And all of those scenarios are very scary. And I think if we're more attentive to it, that when you say someone who really needed it, we might have to ask harder, tougher questions of our doctors, and our kids may have to experience some pain.
Yeah.
Motrin, not such a dangerous drug. You know, it might hurt your stomach. You have to eat before you take it. But painkillers taken too long, even if your kid is suffering from pain, really potentially terrible consequences. So, you know, there's some tough questions here that we have to say. If your kid is in pain and it seems like they really need something to relieve the pain, is there something else? Is there a non-narcotic? And we just have to be more involved in this conversation from a place of knowledge.
Yeah, so that's a big, big question or a couple of questions to ask doctors. One, can we treat this with a non-narcotic? And then two is this area of can we get less? Can we just do one or two to get through a couple of days? Or can we go home and then call this into the pharmacy or call you later if we need it? But to allow some space up front when a medication is prescribed, allow some space and some room. Don't just dive in and go, oh, yeah, we'll just take the pain meds and then we don't have to worry about it. And that goes back to our society. I mean, we have become this, I should be painless and symptom-free is the attitude in our society. I know I went through that with just cold medications. I remember back when I was young and I worked in corporate, if I got a cold, man, I was taking DayQuil, NyQuil, you know, this thing, that thing, Dristam, whatever, just to stop the symptoms so I can keep powering through my life. Whereas now I just shut down for a day or two. I'll do the bare minimum that I need to do. I make sure I eat really well and I get a few good nights sleep. And I'm much less symptomatic without the medications than I ever was with them because I allow my body time. But that's not our culture. It's certainly not our culture. And it's something that you have to fight and stress. We only have a couple more minutes, but you'd also talked before, you know, we're talking about this is one area with prescription drugs where, yes, legitimately this child was taking them. But what is going on with kids using other kids or other adults' medications? I know a good friend of mine, actually she and her son both speak now. They've started a speaking business where they share his story. It was his prescription, but it wasn't a narcotic. Well, I guess I don't know what it was exactly. But
Adderall is the most
snorting it.
Yeah.
They were grinding.
No, it's really, that is a huge problem. But I just want to go back to something you said before we move on to this one, because I think that having the conversation with your doctor is not always enough. I think that we walk into a doctor's office and there is this discrepancy of power, imbalance of power. And so if the doctor turns to you, which they might, and says, oh, there's no problem with that. Just, you know, this will be fine. This is what I think you should do. You have to know that that's not what you want to do, and you have to push it a little. And you might even have some pushback from the doctor. But I don't want people to walk away saying that, thinking that all the doctors are on my side on this discussion, mm-hmm. and that if you just were to bring it up, it'll all get resolved, because I don't believe that's true.
Okay, so, and that is true. Again, it's a cultural thing that goes back to the doctor knows at the time, and they do know a lot, but we also know a lot. And so we want to work with doctors who truly listen to us and respect our opinions and have actual conversations when we ask questions. That's such a great point, Susan. And we're not going to be able to get into a big conversation because we have about a minute and a half, but one tip about keeping our kids away from prescription drugs. What's your number one tip for parents?
I think parents have to be vigilant. While I think that we're a helicopter society as parenting goes, I don't think it's an all or nothing. I think that, you know, in this arena, we have to stay on top of it. We have to be vigilant. We have to lock up our medication. We have to get rid of it when we don't need it anymore. Don't keep it in your house. Find a prescription drug, give back, whatever they call it, in your community. But stay vigilant, because it really is a crisis right now.
Yeah, and I've heard stories from friends whose kids have gone off to college, and you know, when in our day and age people would have a keg in a party, now they have bowls of pills and things. So very scary, but I love that you give us concrete ideas and concrete tips. I know you address all of these topics and more on your website, yourteenmag.com. And you also, I believe you have the link to subscribe to your print magazine on there.
We have a bi-monthly magazine.
Yeah, and I appreciate the copies you sent me. I loved them. They are amazing. You also have a free newsletter and some survival guides and all kinds of stuff there. I appreciate all that you share with us, because you're right, as parents of teens, we just don't have the parental discussions and all the same resources that you get when you're expecting and when you have toddlers. So thank you so much, Susan, for all you do.
Thank you.